You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 353. Hi there. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in Niagara Falls. Joining me on tonight's show, I would normally do like an East Coast, West Coast thing, but staffer Sean, I don't actually know where you're from. Where are you from?
Mid-coast, Chicago.
Oh, that's the third coast, isn't it? Second city, third coast. I don't really know how, what all your wacky Americanisms. So that is Sean Crawford, am I right?
Yes.
Right. Ah, see, I pay attention. That is staffer Sean Crawford, the newest young person that we have on the episode. Ricky Frankel has been demoted to creepy 20-something. I've decided. Also on tonight's show, the regular. That makes it sound like you're a bowel movement. Mr. John Gentile.
Well, regularity is important, but I wouldn't say Ricky's been demoted because he's now the creepy 20-something. I would say he's always been creepy, so that's not a factor of the demotion, if you will.
Oh, all right. Well, as long as we're talking shit about him when he's not here, that's all that really matters to me. John.
That's what punk rock's all about, Adam, talking bad about someone when they can't defend themselves.
Oh, don't I know it. John, it's okay. I have some important news right now.
You're not quitting punk news, are you?
Oh, God. Fuck, man. No. So I have a certain circumstance that I have to deal with on tonight's program. Circumstance is I have a horrible cold, and it is manifesting itself in my chest right now, and it is making me want to, you know, like crawl into a ditch and die. So there are pluses and minuses to this. On the plus, I feel like right now my voice has this kind of like cool, like timbre to it that I think probably sounds pretty good.
Oh, see, I thought you were using like vocal effects to like make yourself sound more podcast.
Yeah, right. Like it's kind of I kind of have this like nice NPR vocal fry thing happening right now, but it's not vocal fry. It's phlegm that's preventing me from breathing. So that's the bad thing.
Well, what's the good thing?
Oh wait, no, that's the good thing. The good thing is that I sound kind of cool. The bad thing is that I am literally going to die within the next hour. And if not, I might come close. So I might be riding the mute button a bit tonight to keep from loudly coughing into the thing. So anyways, this is a lesson to everyone, really about safe sex. You see, when you have children, they don't care about your person. So if they happen to have a cold and be full of snot and disgustingness, they will project it into your open mouth at every given opportunity. And no amount of being a clean person can avoid you concocting their diseases. And you would think that, oh, they're children. They have some sort of children's disease. They have like a kid's cold that I, as an adult male, have built up immunities to over 30 odd years of living, but that's not the way it works. See, their young bodies, they take whatever the virus is that enters in, and they sort of like hyper mutate it really, really quick because everything's moving around really, really fast, right? They have a very small circulatory system. So that virus, John, I'm a microbiologist, so I know what I'm talking about here. It can do like 7 million little cycles there, and you know, it's like speed evolution. I don't know if you ever read Grant Morrison's New X-Men, but there was this whole concept that was in the that comic about something called The World, which was this place you would go into and time moved faster. So it would like hyper evolve these super weapons and things like that. That is what children are like with colds. So there's no escaping it.
What is vocal fry? I've heard that phrase used a lot. What is vocal fry?
You know what? It's one of those things where I'm not actually sure, but people complain about it. People will write into to NPR in particular, but both men and women will do it. But I think that people who are annoyed by it, they feel more annoyed by it when they hear women doing it. So they tend to write into various radio programs and things like that and complain about the way that female hosts are speaking. And as I understand it, it is as you are speaking at some point at the end of a sentence or when you're trying to punctuate something, you'll drop your voice and do a little bit more of a fry and you'll like and kind of let the letter go. But I think they're doing it more unconsciously. It's just the way certain people talk. It's never struck me as a phenomenon that I need to identify and complain about. So I don't really know, but old people, John, old people have a problem with it.
Kind of like a Dungeons and Dragons villain, like, ha ha, heroes, you'll never get my orb of destruction. Is that vocal fry?
I guess. I mean, it's topical because of all the orbs and everything that are happening. Isn't that great that we live in a world where one of the topical references we can make is to like a evil glowing orb? That's really the one great thing about what's going on.
Well, listen, this is the Punk News Podcast. Let's reach into the mailbag. Honestly, Adam, not to drag this out, I've been listening to some new podcasts this week. Man, I hate podcasts. I hate like that affectation people get on podcasts, like welcome to the Glowing Orb Podcast, where we talk about glowing orbs every week. Like, and I hate how most like the hosts are like so gentle or just so bombastic and like with no intellect whatsoever. It seems on podcasts, everyone's trying to affect or create some persona, which I find maddening.
Which podcasts are you listening to?
I'm not dissing people. I'll tell you the ones I like. I like Surviving Creativity, although the last one got pretty weird. That's a cartoon strip. Comics. What do you call the strips in the Sunday newspaper? Comic strip. It's like a comic strip podcast.
Yeah.
Even though I don't draw comic strips, but the last one got really weird. I listen to Chris Gethard's once in a while. I listen to Damian Abraham's. I listen to Black Daddy's got a new podcast, and that's about it. They're all pretty real on their podcasts. I can't stand podcasts for people. I won't name them, but you can figure them out. There's a lot of right now interview podcasts, and I love interviews. I listen to interviews all the time, and I like reading interviews more. But there's a lot of interview podcasts with generally the kinds of bands we cover in Punk News, although maybe more of the emo or indie rock side with some punk thrown in. And the hosts are just insufferable. I want to reach through my computer and strangle them. It's like, oh, it must have been so difficult for you when you realized that gasoline was $2.79 a gallon and no longer $2.59 a gallon. What did you ever do? It's like, shut up. I hate you. That's what I like about Punk News Podcast. We're real, baby. Real. We're keeping it real, like Madball.
Should I not ride the mute button when I have to cough like an idiot then? Like it would be more genuine for people to hear my pain.
Yeah, I think we should be as genuine as possible. You know what I mean? No editing. It's punk rock. No editing whatsoever. Listen, Adam, unless
sound very good.
But. Adam, unless you have something to add, I will reach into our mail.
What?
This is from Jason Beierstein. Jason Beierstein writes in a lot, and he usually writes short, pithy statements. And he's continuing his method today. This is from Jason. Jason says, "I still think Rancid are good," and that's from Jason. So we've been not dissing Rancid lately, but you know, kind of giving them on the new Rancid album. Have we been too harsh, Staff or Sean? Have we been too harsh on Rancid lately?
So, have you heard the song that just came out? I think it was yesterday. There's a new song that came out. Are we going to talk about that? Is that later in the show?
We're talking about it right now.
I didn't see that on the show notes, but
it is now. That's how we roll.
Talking about it. It's there. We're talking. We're real.
Yeah, I don't think I've actually listened to a full Rancid album that came out in like the last decade. But from what I've heard, they've kind of dropped the whole ska thing. Haven't they? Like for the most part, haven't they? From what I've heard. And it feels like they're kind of bringing it back. Like, I think this song, like, it, you know, it's not like the song that's like, it's not going to blow you away, but it's fun. It's kind of got a nice, It's kind of got a nice old Rancid feel, which is kind of what we've been saying, what you guys have been saying about the most of the newer stuff. But
my thing with the old Rancid feel and that ska sound is, I've learned over the years that what I really liked in all of that was the fact that Vic Ruggiero of the Slackers was the one doing it. And so much of the stuff that I thought was like really great sounding, like cool vibe Rancid ska songs were really like Rancid asterisk with Vic Ruggiero doing the cool stuff. And I mean, a lot of the, he was a big part of Life Won't Wait. And a lot of the stuff that they had done on there that was really organ heavy was him playing it. I don't know like exclusively on that album, but he was really heavily involved. That was a time when Hellcat had all of those kind of like cooler, more traditional sounding second wavy sort of ska bands like Hepcat and everything else on them too. So, I mean, that was a cool scene for Rancid to be in. I think they've had ska stuff on their recent records, but they've been like sprinkled in amongst, you know, they I don't want to call them novelty songs because they've always kind of done that, but they're definitely like, you know, not the full brunt of the album, you know, but every once in a while affectation that they put on it. So, I didn't mind this song that came up this week. I don't remember it too much, but I remember it was kind of bouncy and it had an organ, and I'm in for both those things. So, you know, jury's still out. I've not heard this record, so we'll see.
Rancid actually about 2 years ago now maybe put out a pretty neat compilation called All the Moon Stompers, and it's every ska song they released through, I think, Honor Is All We Know or maybe Let the Dominoes Fall. And honestly, like, as an album, it holds up really well. It is what it is. It's Rancid doing ska nonstop, and honestly, it works really well, and it's really enjoyable. And unlike some other bands, maybe Rancid really is able to pull out different aspects of ska. And a lot of bands, we're going to play ska, and every song is exactly the same. Rancid ska, they've got different ska styles, if you will. I think this new track is them just doing their standard ska. It's all right. I think it's going to be Rancid's best album since Indestructible, but I don't know if that's really saying that much, to tell you the truth. I think they're lost. You know what I mean?
I mean, if I want to underline how important I think Vic was as like the unspoken fifth member of Rancid at that point in their lives. So if you take Life Won't Wait, so he played on Hoover Street, Hooligans, Crane Fist, Backslide, what else here? Cash Culture and Violence, Wrongful Suspicion, Corazon de Orzo, or probably how you pronounce that. What else here?
Corazon de Oro. Heart of Gold.
What else?
Heart of Gold.
Who would have thought?
The whole album.
Cocktails. Let's see.
Better question. Why don't they just release that entire unreleased album they did with Vic Ruggiero?
What year was that? What era was that, I guess?
They recorded it simultaneously with Life Won't Wait.
Oh, I didn't know this existed, and I want it.
There's demos of it, and the demos sound like, because they were Rancid and they had a fairly large budget, their demos sound like studio recordings. They released one track. It was called The Silencers on one of the Give Them the Boots, but there's an entire album's worth of material that actually has been bootlegged, and it's really good, and I don't know why they just don't put it out.
The Silencers track is called Bad Policeman. It is really cool. It's definitely people from Rancid and the Slackers that were in that. I didn't realize there was like a whole album of it, and that was that.
There's like 10 songs. I mean, that's almost an album, you know?
Oh, yeah, I want that. I mean, this is like a tip. If you're a band, get Vic Ruggiero to come in and just like do whatever he wants on most of the songs, and you'll have a better album.
Actually, you guys keep talking, but there's actually two really nice Rancid. I mean, I'm usually anti-bootleg, but if the band doesn't want to put it out, then listen, somebody should put it out. There's a series of Rancid bootlegs, and they're actually like most bootlegs, especially Rancid bootlegs, are like really crappy. But there's one bootleg that basically puts out the Silencer demo, and I will tell you guys what it is momentarily. I've got the other one. Oh, I think it's just called the Life Won't Wait demos, maybe. Well, I'll tell you guys. We'll get it figured out. But there's a really good. No, it's not called Life Won't Wait. It's not called the Life Won't Wait demos. But there's a really good series of bootlegs. Oh, here we go. Life Won't Wait demo sessions on Dead Cat Records. I've got one of those. There's three of them total. But and I think it's relatively affordable. It's $18, $19. I might just buy this. I've got the other one, and it's outtakes from Out Come the Wolves, and SoundCloud is really good. So this is a nice bootleg. This is really interesting to the listeners, I'm sure. But there you go.
Huh. Well, I have to go see it's those right now.
Rancid Life Won't Wait demo sessions. One side is Rancid demos. The other side is Silencer demos. But the demos are of such high quality, they sound like studio recordings. And they cover NWA.
Cool. This has been very productive. Now there's something I want. So let's keep going so I can get off this podcast and go find it.
Wait, one second. Did you say they cover NWA?
They do.
Really?
They cover Express Yourself. And I don't know if that's supposed to be ironic or not.
Wait, so that they sampled Express Yourself, right?
I don't know. Did they?
Yeah, I think they sampled that song. And the song that they sample it on is called Express Yourself. But I think it's like...
No, I know the Silencers. I've heard it. The Silencers have done a cover of it.
Gotcha. No, NWA samples Express
Yourself. Oh, no. NWA sample is a sample of Charles Wright and the 103rd Street Band called Express Yourself. Yeah. And the thing with that is Eazy-E's real name is Eric Wright. And so he was going around telling people that Charles Wright is his father because they're both from Compton. But Charles Wright is not Eazy-E's father. Just not true.
Gotcha. So Rancid covers the NWA song that samples Express Yourself.
Correct. Rancid has levels upon levels. This is from Liverpool. This is from Liverpool Neil. Hey, chaps, I loved episode 351. Some great letters, and I love the competing views on Riot Fest. But let's expand it. To me, punk, and rock and roll in general for that matter, has always been at its best when played in a dingy club or basement with 200 other like-minded souls. Intimate and atmospheric. Not in a huge field in the middle of the day with 40,000 people who are mainly there for the occasion or because they got free passes. And to answer staffer Sean when he asked, if I would pass up going to see a fest where the Buzzcocks, Bad Brains, and GBH are playing, yes, and I have. Seeing the Buzzcocks play a 30-minute set at 2 o'clock in the afternoon is not my idea of fun or of $100 well spent. Screw that for a game of soldiers. But guys, in general, what's your poison? Small club gig or open-air festival? As for episode 350, let me just say this. I think it would be great if you could get an interview with a classic older punk rock band that is still recording or touring, such as the UK Subs or Cox Bar. It would be a nice change from the 5-minute interviews with 20-year-olds who might as well have nothing to do with the punk scene in 12 months. You know what I mean? But I really did interview the interview with Melanie K at the end. That was excellent. If you do manage to get an interview with a classic punk band, I'd like to craft some questions. See you next time, and as always, stay free from Liverpool, Neil.
We could totally find some older punk band to come talk to us. We should do that probably before whatever the fuck 400, because why bother? We can make it happen.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I want like an old angry British guy.
We can get Charlie Harper.
I want him so old and angry and British that I have no idea what he's saying, and then he gets frustrated because we can't interpret his answers to anything. To answer the pick your poison thing, a small club show all the way. I mean, I would entirely prefer to go see bands play in a shitty bar than in most other locations, and I'm. I don't know. Like, I don't go to that many like big music in a field type things, but whenever I've seen a band play in like a tiny little club, and then I've seen a band play in like a slightly larger concert venue, it always makes me a little bit sad, and I'd prefer the club thing. I mean, this happened to me at the when I saw the Flag show in Toronto. So Flag played, and then War on Women and the Dirty Nil opened for him. And when the Nil played, it was like, it was an early show anyways for some reason. So, but when the Dirty Nil went on, it was super early and there was like nobody in Lee's Palace. And Lee's Palace is like a medium sized concert venue in Toronto, but you know, it's not a bar. It's a, you know, it's a big raised stage kind of concert hall there. Like you could go see a moderately bigger sized band there. And it was weird because they were up on a stage high enough that like, if you were standing right in front of the stage and you reached up your arm, you could probably maybe touch the top of the stage, but probably not. And it was just like cavernous. And I kind of felt bad for them because it was like a strange environment for that kind of thing to be in. And I saw them the other night playing at a club Absinthe in Hamilton, Ontario, which is just a bar. And, you know, entirely different vibe based on the size of the room and everything like that. So, you know, I would always take bar, small, dingy, you know, that kind of scene over anything bigger.
You know, what's interesting is, and I'm not trying to outpunks anybody here, but to me, a 200 person show is actually what I would call a medium sized show. Lately, I've been going to punk shows when there's been like 30 people there, 20 people there. Punk wise, not the Damned. The Damned had like 600.
As long as the venue is the right size and it's not like 30 people in a venue that would fit 200, then it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer like club shows and smaller venues as well. But the problem is like I never have like the time or money to go to those on a regular basis. So having like giant festivals where I can kind of knock them. Sure, they're shorter sets. They might not be like as intimate, but I think that's kind of most of the shows that I go to per year are just like in 3 days. So, I mean, that's, I guess, comparing on a show to show basis, like, of course I like the, smaller venues, but I think that larger festivals definitely have their merit.
I mean, there's an appeal to like the sampler plate aspect of it, where you can wander around and see like a whole ton of bands. And I absolutely did that back when like the Warped Tour was my thing when I was, I guess, your age. These days, like old man Adam, you know, I want to sit at a rock and roll bar and order like a shitty rock and roll beer and watch a bar playing a band or bar playing.
Give me a rock and roll beer. Bartender, give me a rock and roll beer.
See, I say that, but it's you go to shows around here and there are totally rock and roll beers and not rock and roll beers, and it is clear. No one says it, but it's clear what the in vogue rock and roll beers are.
What, you mean like Pabst Blue Ribbon or something?
Yeah, but like the Ontario version of that. So like if you go see a band and play in a shitty bar around here, If they have it, like most of the band and people are like standing around drinking Labatt 50, which is like Labatt 50 is like I was gonna say Labatt 50 is sort of like Molson Export, but you probably don't have Molson Export either.
It's probably like Coors. It's like
Coors. like but not Coors like the Coors Banquet, like the old school
the
Coors,
banquet beer,
right? Where like it's just like some 100-year-old ale recipe that you know, they never bothered to change because like old people drank it and they just kind of stuck around. Like that tends to be the beers that I'll see everyone drinking at these shows. Actually, the last one I saw, there were a bunch of people walking around drinking, that like Coors Banquet stuff too. But like, and that all sort of fits into that like PBR vibe where like, you're going to go to a shitty bar and watch a shitty punk rock band and you're going to drink, you know, some old beer that your grandfather would have drank at it. That's what it feels like. I don't know. At least around here, that's what I see. Like all these guys that are going to these shows are probably the same guys, myself included, that would, you know, you'd go do craft breweries and things like this and drink like your fancy IPAs and all that shit. But you don't go do that at the punk rock show. At the punk rock show, you go order a fucking 50 and you drink that. I don't know why. No one says it. It's not like a rule. It's written down, but that's what I see.
I stopped drinking beverages entirely at punk rock shows, and here's why. Is I don't drink alcohol really, so I'm like, give me a ginger ale, and they're like $4, and plus I gotta tip them. I'm like, I'm so sick of paying $5 for like 12 cents worth of soda, so I stopped drinking entirely.
John.
Listen, when you get like $4 is exorbitant for a soda, right? But I mean, you still gotta tip, right? Because that's not the server's fault, right?
Yeah, even if you're ordering beer, yeah, it's gonna be more expensive than you would get it otherwise. But you know, you're in a venue; they got to make their money. That's how they do it. And you don't want to, you know, you got to tip your bartender unless you want to, you know, go burn in hell forever. So that's.
You don't think $4 for a soda is exorbitant?
I guess maybe for that, because that probably comes out of like, some disgusting plastic bag full of soda mix that they have under the table that they're pressing through the fountain machine. But I don't know. It's the venue. You pay for it. Get a glass of water. Yeah,
well, I stopped paying for it. So how about that? Listen, you guys know that I love me my self-righteous musicians who often get themselves in the binds. Would you guys rather hear a Danzig track or a Morrissey track?
Oh, I think you got to play a Danzig track. Now, when you're talking about getting into binds, because you're going to talk about this Danzig record, right?
I wasn't going to talk about the social issue because people already forgot about it, but I'll talk about it if you want. I was just going to talk about the record itself.
Oh, okay, because is your boy not in the news right now, trumping it up?
He is, but people already forgot about it. All right, I'll talk about it. So you guys know internet outrage used to last a week. Then it lasted 2 days. Then it lasted a day. Now internet outrage lasts about 7 hours. So no matter how hot the water you're in, it'll be over in 7 hours. Especially, I mean, look, if anything, the president himself has been setting a precedent that to get people not to be outraged anymore, just say something else outrageous and they'll forget about it. Well, Danzig, if you ask me, he was the subject sort of a hit piece. I think it was LA Weekly interviewed him, and then they didn't print the whole interview. They printed questionable clips in the interview, and there was two things. The first thing, I guess we should probably pull the actual article up, right, Adam? So I'm going to pull it up. But basically, they asked Danzig, "What do you think about Planned Parenthood? And what do you think about Trump's ban or whatever?
Travel ban.
Trump's travel
ban." But okay, before we bring up what Danzig answered to those things, why would you ask those things?
Why? Because I'll tell you why. Because you're being a dick and you're trying to get Danzig backed into a corner because you want to be, oh, let's make fun of Danzig. You know, people need to get over it, man. Like honestly, people are bullies at their heart. Like, Danzig does what Danzig does. You know, you rarely hear Danzig dissing on people unless people ask him, you know. But people are always trying to provoke him and pick on him, say, oh, isn't Danzig a nerd? You know, he's got cats. Isn't Danzig a nerd? He likes comic books. Well, yeah, he is a nerd. But I thought in punk rock and society in general now, it's like not cool to pick on nerds. But somehow, if the nerd is Danzig, it's fine to pick on him and say he's a nerd. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think it's just to get clicks. It seems like, you know, you ask the provoking questions to get provoking answers, and that's what gets ad revenue.
I mean, I don't even know if it's so much. I think you're right. The result is, I don't think the interviewer said, oh, this will get us more money. I think the interviewer said, oh, I'll get Danzig to say something outrageous, and that way this will get shared and I'll be cool, yeah, and people will laugh at Danzig, you know.
Yeah, but so, I don't think his like whoever it was, I don't think it was their overall goal to kind of slander Danzig. I think that maybe that was part of it, but like it ultimately just plays into just getting people to read their article, like another interview on Danzig.
Oh, I think they were trying to slander him. It's in the LA Times. And if you read it, they did one of the lamest things you can do, at least for a musician, is they interviewed Danzig, but then wrote a negative hit piece on him, which that's bullshit. You know what I mean? Like you don't have to, an interview should not be, you know, a commercial, but if you interview somebody and just do a hit piece on them, that's pretty lame, you know, unless they do something really bad. But if you do anything bad, they should interview them. So anyways, Danzig commented on Planned Parenthood, and he also commented on the travel ban. Here's what he said about Planned Parenthood. I might be conservative on some issues, and on some issues I'm really liberal. I'm pro-abortion and I'm pro-Planned Parenthood. But I don't think Planned Parenthood should be selling baby parts like a chop shop in Brooklyn, okay? And people went to town on Danzig on that. I think people are just being – I think people know that Danzig doesn't actually think Planned Parenthood is selling babies. I think that's Danzig-style humor, which is purposely made hard to discern in the article itself. I mean, I think that's Danzig being funny. And if you agree that he's trying to be funny, it's actually kind of – it's kind of a funny joke. But also the thing is like, I can't believe Danzig said something bad. I can't believe Danzig said something evil. Isn't Danzig's entire platform that he's evil? Why would you expect Danzig to be a moral high ground when all his songs are about summoning devils, killing people, and having Jackie Onassis, you know, hand manipulate John Kennedy to bring him back from the dead. You know what I mean? Like, why would people think Danzig would be some sort of moral high ground? Isn't it his function to be the opposite of the moral high ground and to be the immoral low ground, if you will?
People are very uncomfortable if we're not, if our elders are not stepping up to be heroes. So.
But he's dead. His whole thing is he's an anti-hero. Pretty much every song he's ever written is about how much he loves Satan.
Well, I mean, I think that that's his musical personality. That, I mean, when you're having an interview, like, there's certain people like Odorous Urungus, for example, who would have their personality kind of overlap with their interviews, and they would kind of take that personality just into their normal life. But Danzig doesn't really do that. But either way, it's kind of besides the point. I think that if that's his opinion, like, I don't agree with it, but like, I don't see why. I guess there's such an outrage over what one person thinks. There's a lot of people who think that. Like, why is it so crazy that Danzig would be one of them?
Wait, so you do think Planned Parenthood should be selling baby parts?
No, I specifically said I wait. Rephrase that question again.
Danzig said he's pro Planned Parenthood, but he doesn't think Planned Parenthood should be selling baby parts. And I'm pretty sure that's a joke. Yeah. Or I'm pretty sure he's just saying that to annoy people because he's Danzig. And I think he's showing what I like about Danzig is that he's showing he's capable of independent thought. He doesn't go by. Yeah. I don't agree with him on a lot of things, but I don't need to agree with him a lot. The function of Danzig is not for him to give me moral guidance. You know what I mean? I don't know why people think that's Danzig's function.
So what did he say about the travel ban? Let's bring it all in.
Well, this one's harder to he says when you it's not really a travel ban, Danzig says. When you walk into the country, we want to see who you are and what you're doing. Well, when I go to every country right now, they look at me and see whether I can come in or not. And I've been turned away from Canada and other places before. Where's my protest? Where's my parade? So they're interpreting that as in Danzig hates Muslims. I will point out that the article is very clipped and the whole conversation is not made clear. But he's not saying that he hates Muslims. It appears that he's saying that there should be some restrictive guidelines or backgrounds such as on people entering the country.
Did he actually say, where's my parade?
He did. He did. You know, and I mean, that's kind of funny too. Like, you know, I don't necessarily agree with where he's coming from, but I don't think what he's saying is beyond the pale. I think he's just saying something that I disagree with. And we've gotten to the point where as a culture, if someone in the spotlight says something that the general consensus disagrees with, he should be destroyed. I mean, he's not saying he hates Muslim people. He's not even saying that he agrees with Trump. He's just saying that he thinks people should have background checks. You know, do I agree with the essence of what he's saying? No, but I don't need to. You know, like, why do we need to agree with what Danzig is saying in order to appreciate Danzig's art? You know what I mean? Like, why?
Now, I haven't read the whole article, but from what you've read, does he even like mention Muslims at all, or did they just kind of decide to read between the lines and come to that conclusion?
Well, we don't know because the LA Times did a half hour to 45-minute interview, but we've got a grand total of about 5 sentences, you know. So he doesn't mention Muslims, and he doesn't even mention the Trump's travel ban exactly. The article itself just, in that one sense that I just read, addresses that Danzig thinks there should be background checks coming into a country because he had background checks. And like I said, I think there's more to his statement than just that. But I don't think he's saying something inherently horrible. I think he's just saying something that I disagree with, assuming where he's coming from is where I think he's coming from.
Without even trying to psychoanalyze where he's coming from, let's say the situation was that Danzig, the person, totally agrees full on with Trump's travel ban. Let's just say that's his opinion. If it was, it's still odd to me that you would go interview someone for an hour and a half, ostensibly because they have a record coming out, because why else would I talk to you?
Actually, Adam, it was specifically for his music festival that he had this past week.
Sure, okay. So you're interviewing them about, like, about a topic. And then I guess I'm trying to put, like, figure out the motivations, not of Danzig right now, but of the interviewer. So like at what point when you're talking to him about this topic, do you go, oh, hey, well, hey, I've got this colorful personality in the room. I'm just going to start, like, running the gamut of questions about things that have nothing to do with the subject of the interview, to see if we can get this colorful character to say something colorful. And then, oh, hey, they did. Well, there's our news. Like, that seems a little bit disingenuous to me. I sort of expect that most people have lots of opinions that I don't agree with or would have a problem with, but I don't know what they are with most people because no one's interviewing them and exposing those things in that way. So I don't know. It feels kind of weird to me that's the way this is all framed. Like, you know, I sort of assume that Danzig has lots of thoughts and feelings and opinions that I probably don't agree with, and I can still sleep with that fact. So
that's part of what makes him Danzig. You know, you don't write a song.
Well,
like,
I mean, that's part of what makes anyone anything. Like, I don't expect that. I don't agree with you on a lot of shit, John, but it doesn't bother me too much, and I don't need anyone telling me, you know, do you know what John thinks about this? And it's like, no, I don't really give a shit as long as he's not hurting anyone. You know,
Adam, what if society tries to break us apart? What if they start demanding, Adam, you can't talk with John anymore because he thinks X, Y, Z?
Oh, John, you and I are going to Romeo and Juliet ourselves. That's what we'll do. Show them all. Right? Show them all.
Well, speaking of suicide, this is off the new Danzig album, which, aside from the cheesy track Devil on Highway 9, which I don't know what he was thinking, the new Danzig album, and I don't say this as just like a blind fan, I did analyze this album somewhat objectively. New Danzig album, despite Devil on Highway 9 and despite production problems, great album. Like, way better. I mean, honestly, like, he put it against me in that he led with the objectively worst single. And not only is it the worst single, it's like the worst single by far. The rest of the album is not like the single at all. And I don't know why he did that. But the album itself is great, man. I mean, it's not the best album, but it's excellent. And I would say it's in the top 50% of Danzig albums. I think it's real good. Let's do the opening track, Black Laden Crown, off the new Danzig album, Black Laden Crown. And if you like Danzig doing the gloom and spookiness, you will dig this album, Black Laden Crown by Danzig.
Get out!
back. We're just sort of talking about whatever here. Do we have more? You want to talk about more mail or zaniness or anything like that?
Yeah, now let's get on with the meat of the matter. So, the meat of the matter.
All right, awkward seg into. All right, so Hot Water Music made a big announcement this past week. They have a new record coming out. The record is going to be called Light It Up. It's coming out on September 15th on Rise. The band have released a video for the song. What is the song called? Never Going Back. So it is one of those lyric videos that everyone loves. And you can find that over on Punk News. The album's up for pre-order. There's all sorts of wheels are in motion right now. So this is the follow-up to 2012's Exister. So you can go check that song out. Sean, do you have a chance to?
I was actually listening to it when you called. I got 2 minutes and 28 seconds in. I'm still yet to listen to the last 59 seconds. So there's some twist there.
That's about as much prep as we do for anything on the show. So you're fitting right in.
Great. I think I liked it. I've only actually listened to one Hot Water Music album, and that's Caution, and I really like Caution, and how there's kind of like a bit of Fugazi worship on there, but like I recognize that their catalog's kind of vast, and it doesn't really kind of have most of the elements that I really like about Hot Water Music, but like it sounds like Hot Water Music as I've heard them, so I think it's decent.
John, I'm not even gonna ask because.
Well, it's no Danzig.
I mean that's what I kind of expect there. This is a to me it's a bit of a snoozer as far as the single off a new Hot Water Music record goes. It's fine. It sort of sounds like a mid album track to me. It's kind of mid tempo. It's a little over long, and it just. You know, it does its thing. Chuck Reagan yells words that are fun to hear Chuck Reagan yell, but that's that. It's not super dramatic or doing anything that you have not heard before from Hot Water Music, but hey, you know, you should go check it out. The one thing that I've been playing with and I was playing with before we started this podcast, and this is going to probably sound way more derogatory than it needs to, but someone in our comment section said, hey, this song sounds really good if you change the YouTube video to play at 1.5 times. And I did, and like, no shit, it sounds really good at 1.5 times. Like, it gives it just a little bit more kick than you'd expect. Doesn't chipmunk anyone's voices or anything like that. Like, everything's moving a little bit nicer. So I'm playing with it, and I'm thought, well, what if I play this at like 2x speed? And John, no word of a lie, this song is cool at 2x speed. So, at two times speed, they're basically playing like a hardcore band, and it totally works. And I guess that means this song is probably a little bit on the slower side in general, because it's not like 2x speed makes it, you know, impossible. So, go listen to it and then play with the tempos on YouTube because it's kind of fun to do so.
Speaking of chipmunking and speed, have you ever heard that guy that took Chipmunk Punk? Do you know the record Chipmunk Punk?
I have heard of it.
Yes.
Yeah, some guy took it. And you know, with the chipmunks, the way they do it is they record some guy at 33 and then speed it up to 45. Some guy took the music from Chipmunk Punk and took it from 45 back down to 33, and it sounds like drone metal, and it actually sounds like really good.
We should just mess up the tempos and everything that we listen to for this show. It would make things way more interesting. So next story, and this will be the last one I'll read for a little bit because I'm seriously about to lose my voice or die. So we talked a little while ago on this show about the fact that I went up to Toronto and went to an Against Me show that was in George Strombolopoulos' living room. Well, he's it's online now. So Strombo's started this big thing with Apple Music, I guess, is behind it, where they're producing a bunch of content. So he has this show now called House of Strombo, where it is they're putting these performances online. So the Against Me performance, which is like all 50 minutes worth, is on there. It features Lucas Silveira of the band The Clicks doing a verse during of The Ocean. Laura Jane covers the best ever death metal band out of Denton by the Mountain Goats on it. And I'm in the video a whole fuck ton. I didn't actually think I was in the video that much, but then I watched like 20 minutes of it with my wife, and I'm there all the time to a disturbing amount.
This is true. I like Adam White said, I might be on the video somewhere. I randomly picked some spot like 15 minutes in and watched like literally like 5 seconds worth. And there is Adam White. He's basically the fifth member of Against Me in this video.
The problem is that I'm at this show where everybody's in a black shirt because they're all punk people. And I'm wearing a white shirt. So when you're in this black and white video and you're scanning through the cloud, I'm like a beacon because I'm the only guy wearing a white shirt.
Well, you're a superstar, Adam White. I think it's cool, man. I think it's cool. Hey, what do you think of the choice to do a black and white video as opposed to a color video?
I don't know, like Rancid Vision, I guess. No, Rancid Vision would just like put like random dots and and other like After Effects noise on top of it. I don't know. It honestly did not strike me very much one way or another that it was in black and white when I saw it. So it seems totally fitting, I guess, to me. It did not elicit a strong negative reaction.
I noticed the guy from Refuse, which is in the band, he goes for the Lemmy style microphone stance, which is kind of cool.
Oh, see, was he? That is actually the guy from the International Noise Conspiracy, I believe.
Oh, he's not from Refused.
He played in a few of the Refused reunion thingies, but he was not one of like the main Refused dudes when Refused was at their prime. I believe.
But didn't one of the main Refused guys go to International Noise Conspiracy?
Well, it was Dennis's band, okay. Right? It was the singer of Refused's band, but he. When Refused reformed later, I believe Dennis brought back a few of the like Noise Conspiracy players with him to help because there was not like the full complement of the original Refused lineup didn't all come back. So,
Adam, I'm looking at you right now. There you are, smiling, enjoying yourself. Speaking of people enjoying themselves, one guy's not going to enjoy himself for too much longer on the radio. Poor old Rodney Bingenheimer. He's been kicked off K-Rock after 40 years. At first, it wasn't clear as to why his last show was going to be on June 5, which is 5 days from now. Probably it'll be over time you hear this. But later on, it came out that he was actually fired from K-Rock or asked to leave. Or basically, K-Rock said, don't bother coming in because we're not going to give you your Sunday midnight to 3 a.m. time slot. The very valuable Sunday midnight from 3 a.m. time slot. In a way, it's the end of an era, and there's a lot you could extrapolate from this. In case you don't know, Rodney Bingenheimer, he is maybe one of the last influential DJs, and people won't even understand this now. Kids, I mean, Stan Frishon will understand this because, you know, Stan Frishon has never not known the iPod. But in the 50s and 60s and throughout the 70s, DJs were the guys that would make or break bands. Like there were cool DJs in New York City, Philadelphia, LA, San Francisco. And if these guys played your record, it meant that your band might actually become a full-time band. Just by them playing your record, it might be crazy to think about now. But if a DJ said, these Led Zeppelin cats are pretty good, and he plays Led Zeppelin on the radio, all of a sudden you go from a band of being nobody to literally being a national or even an international band. That's how strong that was the power of DJs in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Rodney Bingenheimer came along at the tail end of that. He got his career by roadieing for the Monkees, and then he got a radio show in the Sunset Strip a little bit before punk began. And actually, Rodney Bingenheimer has an incredible ear for music. He was the first guy in America to play David Bowie. That's the truth. He was the first guy to play the Sex Pistols, or one of the first guys to play the Sex Pistols, The Clash, Blondie. I'm trying to think of what other bands that basically became popular because Rodney played them. Black Flag, Rodney on the Rock. He actually put out three compilations of the punk bands that he played. But not only that, he continued being a force throughout the 80s and 90s. He actually kind of made No Doubt and Sublime popular. And actually, he's the guy that first started playing Coldplay. Not that I'm a Coldplay fan, but Coldplay is one of the biggest rock bands in the world. And Rodney played him first on the radio. So he went in the 70s from being the main man, the cultural force, the guy that makes or breaks bands. By the end of the career, he's the guy that only people that are really into music know listen to him for eccentric music that you wouldn't hear otherwise. So he went from being the biggest of the mainstream to being the most eclectic of the eclectic. And so it very much is the end of an era, because I think he's the last DJ that had that kind of force. And it's kind of sad how, you know, I mean, he's 69. How much longer is he going to be on the radio? So it's kind of sad that K-Rock's firing him. And not only that, there's a documentary called Mayor of the Sunset Strip. Of course, as you know, all documentaries are up for, I guess, analysis in that how accurate is the vision portrayed in the documentary. But Adam or Stan or Sean, have you guys seen Mayor of Sunset Strip, the documentary?
No.
I have not. It's been one of those things that's been on the list for a long time, though.
You should see it because, at least in the documentary, Rodney Bingenheimer is presented as quite the tragic figure. Basically, his parents got divorced when he was 3, I think. His dad really didn't like him at all because his dad was kind of a macho army guy, and Rodney Bingenheimer was a quiet little introspective kid. His mom basically abandoned him when he was like 12, I think, or something, and he didn't see his mom again for like 5 or 6 years. And so in the document, why do I think I'm pronouncing that word incorrectly? Documentary. Man, I've been having trouble with words lately. I don't know why. He's presented as this guy that basically he wants to be famous because he feels that gives him self-value. So the way he tries to be famous is by associating with famous people, and that's how he became Rodney on the Rock, the famous DJ. You know, he's the guy that knows David Bowie. He's the guy that knows Blondie. He's the guy that knows the Ramones. He's probably the first guy to play the Ramones on the radio. And so he basically said, oh, you want to meet Debbie Harry? I'll get you to meet Debbie Harry. And so that's kind of how he got self-value as portrayed by the documentary. And so he's presented as kind of a tragic figure. And so people were calling him creepy. I wouldn't call him creepy. I would call him sad, assuming the documentary is accurate. But it's sad. And you know, it's just, you know, corporate radio, you know, it's the homogenization of mainstream music and even non-mainstream music as a whole. And it's somewhat scary that they would just kick Rodney in the ass on the way out, because he's a cultural force. He's an interesting guy. He certainly is a guy with an ear for music. And they're just like, well, after 40 years, get the hell out, even though you only have, 3 years left of what you're going to actually play music. So it's sad. So I don't know if any of you guys got an opinion on this or not, or what.
No, I mean, Rodney's one of these guys that is like, he's spoken of in the same, you know, rock history reverence that people talk about, like Lester Bangs and things like that. Like, he is just like from that era that no longer exists. I don't know why K-Rock got rid of him. And I can't, I'm sure it was some boring business reason, right? But
they say why they got rid of him is basically they're changing format, which means they don't want him to play weird songs and they don't want to pay him. I don't know how much he's getting paid, but I don't think it's that much. You know what I mean? 3 hours a week, Sunday from midnight to 3 a.m.
I mean, you know what this means? He's going to go get a podcast now.
You know what this means is we need to have Rodney Bingenheimer become the Punk News resident DJ.
Yeah, we could just ape his whole audience. All right, John, let's hang up. Let's go get Rodney. We'll bring him on. There's no money, but there's the prestige of. No, there's no prestige, but what is there, John?
What does he get from being associated with hatred?
How do we sell him?
We can tell music. We know lots of famous people. We know lots and lots of famous people.
Yeah, if he wants to talk to, you know, Blag or who UK else subs.
Sorry, Blag. That's about who I know. I know Blag.
Joel
Tannenbaum.
God, who else do we know? If you want to talk to like Dominic Davi, we get him to talk to him. Oh, we don't know anyone. Shit. You may have to get a loan.
I have to get a loan.
That's the only way we're going to make this happen. All right.
Oh, go ahead.
God, all right. So, here, I'll play a song, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk about some other stuff. So, it is a couple weeks out from the Ottawa explosion. There's a whole bunch of bands that I'm really stoked to see there. The one that I'm excited to finally see live is a band out of Hamilton called Sweet Dave and the Shallow Graves. So Sweet Dave is Dave O'Connor, that is the lead singer to a grungy punk band out of Hamilton called TV Freaks that we've played on this show a bunch of times. And his band, the Shallow Graves, plays a sort of like esoteric, weird, gothic... it's hard for me to really nail down what it is. He sounds sort of like he's doing a death rock, new wavy, like purposefully like spooky voice and all the stuff they're doing. I've heard people compare it to like Lux Interior of the Cramps or some of the Damned's weirder stuff. So anyways, though, it's super fun though. It has this kind of like old school, 80s new wave goth thing happening in it. So anyways, Sweet Dave and the Shallow Graves. One of the people in the band is the former bass player of the Dirty Nil, Dave Nardi. So he's playing with them. And they're fun. So here we're going to go. They had a cassette tape that came out earlier this year called Mental Jails. So I'm going to play you the song Privilege Test from Mental Jails. And you should go check these guys out, because not all their songs sound totally different from each other. And there's sort of like a really weird vibe on the whole thing. So it's interesting. So here you go. This is Sweet Dave and the Shallow Graves. Sorry, I'm dying. Sweet Dave and the Shallow Graves playing Privilege Test.
Don't know about history, never been like books. Ain't much for words, in fact, ain't much for looks. Can't write a symphony, I failed in school. Ain't much for right or wrong, ain't much for moves. I never learned to dance, ain't into holding hands. Not interested in self-help, I'm never on the land. I got shit, man. Between me and you, I think you'd be much better off if you were under my shoes.
I'm a bad, privileged jerk. Man, a heartless, self-centered, and the worst. Yeah.
Don't know the fashion trends, my clothes are secondhand. I'm on my own 2 feet, but I can't stand, can't stand, can't stand, can't stand to say the wrong word. Sometimes I can't shut up. You see a glass half full, I see an empty cup. So send me Jesus, and send me Allah too. Gotta get to heaven, gotta make myself anew. Gotta have compassion, gotta love everyone. Gotta wash away my sins before my kingdom comes. So kiss me daddy, and kiss me mommy too. They're gonna change me, wanna make it just like you. Respect your neighbor, and love your enemies. You'll have to lie.
I'm a bad, privileged jerk. Man, a heartless, self-centered, and at worst, yeah.
All right, we're back. A couple more things we'll talk about before we wrap up this week, and then I can go lie down.
I wanted to mention one more thing. His Mayor of Sunset Strip, Kim Fowley plays a big part. I mean, Kim Fowley is all over everything, man. And of course, there were those accusations after he died. I'm saying, man, Kim Fowley does not come off good in the Mayor of the Sunset Strip documentary. I think people always he's always saying, I'm a creep, I do bad things. And people were – I think people – assumed that he was just being like silly or like trying to make a certain persona. But I actually think he was doing bad things and he was telling everyone he was doing bad things, but just no one believed him. You know what I mean? Like, Kim Valley is one creepy dude, man.
He is known as being one creepy dude, so.
But I think people thought it was kind of like a Vincent Price kind of thing, you know, like, I'm a ghoul. But I think he's actually like, I think he's just as stunned as everyone else is that he keeps saying he's doing all these horrible things and no one believes him. You know what I mean? I would like to see a documentary on him.
Just why can't you say that word?
I don't know, man. Documentary.
Yeah, you just gotta Jesus say Christ. It right once, and then we'll overdub every time that you say.
Although you just described the song that I played, calling Sweet Dave and the Shallow Graves a sort of like Vincent Pricey, I'm a ghoul band is probably not a bad way to put that. So,
I like that kind of band.
That's yeah. Cool. So that's rewind. Cool. That was a better description than what I used in the lead into that song. So, anyways, talk about Tao Cross here.
Tao Cross, we'll blast through this. Tao Cross. Tao Cross is the supergroup, mainly notable for including Rob Miller of Amoebix following the end of Amoebix. Also, it's got Michelle Away of that band up from Canada. What's that band from Canada called? That metal band? Not Exodus, they're from America. Anyway, one of the guys from Misery and one of the guys from War Plague. I'm imagining the cover of that French Canadian band. But what, I can't.
Anvil?
Voivod.
Anvil.
No, Voivod. Well, Anvil's not French Canadian, though.
No, but they were that band that you played that was an old metal band that everyone got mad at you because you played them on this show.
Well, it was about pirates. Funny story about Michel Away. I saw him at a show once. I was like, oh, man, I'm really excited to see Tao Cross. And he goes, well, thank you. Do you know where I can get any marijuana? I was like, no. Anyways, Tao Cross, this is their second album. I'm excited. The opening single was called Deep State. The album's called Pillar of Fire. It's much more thrash than Amoebix. Really, it's basically a thrash album with Rob Miller of Amoebix singing over top. It sounds cool. I'm excited. I wish Amoebix was still together, but if I can't get Amoebix, then I will certainly gladly take Tao Cross.
I haven't heard this song because it doesn't work for me. So fuck the internet.
I just think I'm going to keep getting them mixed up with Dead Cross.
Another band.
I can't keep track of two kind of metal supergroup bands with Cross in the name at the same time.
But there's also Broken Cross.
Oh, who's that?
That's another metal supergroup. Stafford Sean, you're a young fellow. Yeah. Where do the young people stand on crust punk these days? Is it cool? Is it in with Wacky Spinners?
I don't know. I don't hear many people talking about it for the most part. Like sometimes you see it on the internet and people are just like, oh, they're gross people. I think, I don't know. That's, I mean, that's, I really see a lot of animosity because people are always
good.
Talking about how they have to smell them and like.
Stanford Sean, as a young fellow, what are your favorite punk bands or some of your favorite punk bands? Oh. I'm interested to hear what the youth has to say.
Dead Kennedys, Bomb the Music Industry.
Oh.
Andrew Jackson.
Do you like Jeff Rosenstock?
Yeah. And Arrogant Sons of Bitches, too. Mm. Can't really get into whatever the, however you pronounce that thing that he's doing with Chris Farron.
Anarcho Vespucci. Hey, yeah. did I buy an Arrogant Sons of Bitches CDs from you once off Discogs before I knew you?
I don't think. I haven't sold anything on Discogs, so that definitely not that. Yeah.
Do you find most of people your age listen to what you listen to or not?
That I know, not really. But like, if you, you gotta find. If you find a scene, then yeah, but like there's nothing really around here. For whatever reason, we've gotten into kind of into the Aurora, Illinois scene, which is like an hour and a half away. So there's good people who like good music. You just have to find them. They're not everywhere.
Here's my advice to you, and here's my advice to any young person entering adulthood and heading off to college. find the punk rock scene. I really wish I had found the punk rock scene at Penn State. I kind of think maybe one didn't exist while I was there. But man, like, I go to house shows now, and man, it would have been awesome to be 22. Well, it'd be awesome to be 22 now, even that. But like, it would have been awesome to be involved in those scenes when I was in college. It looks like so much fun. I mean, I can't be involved in it now because I'm too creepy. Like, well, I'm not creepy, but being that I'm 33, I'm creepy to the 22-year-olds. And honestly, I'm too old to be hanging out with them. But go find that punk scene, or even if there's not a punk scene, kind of the indie or the art scene. It looks like so much fun, and I think you'll have a great time, dude. Adam, like, you concur?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I could go back in time and give my young self advice, it would be like, you know, don't try to go live the rest of your life too quickly and just, like, go hang out in more art scenes.
Yeah. Did Adam, were you involved in the cool hip music scene in your college? Because I definitely was not. And I that might be one of my biggest regrets from college. I was.
Oh, no. Like, and I think about it, and I'm like, while I was in college, and Sean, you do this. This is good. I don't know why I wasn't, like, involved in the radio station at my college. Like, I totally.
Yes.
Been, right. And there was opportunity to have been in that I had to, like, walk up a set of stairs and ask someone. But I don't know. I look back at a lot of that time in my life and I'm like, what the fuck was I doing? It's like, I wasn't even wasting it, interestingly, because I can't really remember what I was doing. I was just, like, being. I guess I was writing for Punk News is what took up a lot of my time. Fucking Punk News. But yeah, I don't know. I would have done more of that.
I think the hardest part of college maybe is in college, you're thrown into a scene, so you get friends, and often they're friends in your dorm or people around. And basically, I was friends with the people across the hall. Like in my dorm, there was a group of people, boys and girls, that were all kind of pals. And they were all right people, but they just were not in my mindset. And so I was never really, like, close with any of them. And so I wish, instead of basically grabbing on to what was the most available friendship-wise, I had sought out the art or the indie music scene and gotten involved in that instead of the people that just happen to be in my dorm. You know what I mean? Because I'm not really friends with any of them anymore, you know?
Oh, yeah. I have a whole list of people that we were for a semester really close with because of our proximity. And then, you know, when we were on the winter break away from them, we're like, oh, why are we hanging out with these people? Fuck. And then we just didn't anymore. So
Yeah. So Stanford, Sean, that's one of my biggest advice to you going to college. Adam, I think sometime maybe we should do a tips for college episode or half an episode. What do you think of that?
That sounds like something that I don't need to give people advice on, but I will totally do it.
I think we should do it sometime. We'll do that sometime. And we'll give the disclaimer that we might be horribly wrong. So, but I mean, honestly, I could have used a little bit of advice with regards to that in college. Anyway, let's wrap up this episode, Adam White.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So someone else play a song. Sean, play a song.
Yeah. Let's see. I guess this is kind of, it is a local band, but, like, they're not, like, a small, like, kind of DIY local band anymore. Because one of the guys in it, I think, was, like, in Evil Empire before, which I think was a ska band on Asian Man. Does that ring a bell at all?
I think Evil Empire is a heavy metal band that dresses like, okay, Darth Vader.
Then I might not be thinking of the right one. The one with the rabbits on one of the album covers.
What's on the cover?
It's, like, some cartoon rabbits.
Kepi Ghoulie?
No.
Is it an Asian Man band?
Empire. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. They were a ska band. Anyways, these are kind of a local Chicagoan band that I've never seen them live, but they seem to be opening for every show that, like, I want to go to, but, like, there's some sort of conflict. So, still haven't seen them, but I think I'll play a song by them. They're kind of a interesting kind of ska core band that kind of blend hardcore punk, ska, metal, and they make some good music. So I'm gonna play a song off of their most recent album. I think they're coming out with another this summer, and they've got Joey Cape on it and some other big names. But I think it's the opener, called Almost There.
Despair, the war on drugs, can't be for real. Try and take mine, it's a time. nation that keeps your nation flat.
We're almost there. Waiting, waiting for, waiting for.
People drop dead, catching death's rise. Big tobacco seats are changing of the tide. Heal the body, heal the mind. Heal economies in decline.
We're just a fire that America put out. Misguided education, safety is in doubt. But the rivers, the evergreen state, set the stage for the groundwork laid.
We're almost there. Waiting, waiting for, waiting for. We're almost there. Waiting, waiting for, waiting for.
All right, and we're back. If you want to send us an email, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. Thanks to Mr. Greg Simpson for being our producer week on week. And anything else, John? I'm looking so forward to hanging up so that I can just double over and cough and writhe around on the floor and feel bad about myself.
I think I just bullied Stanford Sean into convincing him the name of the band Evil Empire is not Evil Empire, because it clearly is. I just Googled it. It is the band Evil Empire.
Well, you're a horrible person. So
I guess so.
Maybe there's just another Evil Empire.
I think maybe there is. I think there's an Evil Empire. Oh, it's Galactic Empire is the band.
We just assume most bands are novelty costume bands now.
They have some connection. They have some connection to... did I say the name of the band? Wait, I don't think I said the name of the band. The band is still alive. I didn't say the name of the band.
Yeah.
Okay, the name of the band is still alive. They have connections to Evil Empire. I knew I was forgetting something.
That's okay. You're new.
I thought Sean was saying, I've got a song by a band called Evil Empire here. And I'm like, no, the name of that band is not Evil Empire. I thought that's what happened. Anyway, the Punk News Podcast is a novelty podcast. and we'll have some good college tips for you.
All right. See you guys later. Bye.
This has been a Valor Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@valorundergroundstudios.com.